This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 4, Episode 10. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
020-88-167-691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. Welcome to the show, Garrus. Welcome to the show, Berners. Garrus, you're in London at the moment, I understand.
I am. I'm in a hotel. I'm in Greenwich. I'm on a course which is about facilitating meetings, which has been really interesting, actually, because it's an area that I've done quite a lot of without any training in. And, yeah. You know, as with any course that you go on, you think, crikey, I could have probably done that a bit better. And it's been good. It's been very practical, which has been excellent.
Meetings are always difficult, aren't they? Because they can so easily be derailed and go on too long and end up in an argument, and something that should be simple, it's very simple that can go wrong very easily.
Yeah, it is. And the dynamics of a group are interesting. And meetings don't necessarily have to be one with an agenda, do they? In cricket, you know, you can have your committee meetings and at clubs and within regions. But also you have your three-minute meetings, don't you, with a player, telling them that they're dropped or giving them feedback. And you have your meetings with teams after games and in review as well. So, no, it's been fascinating, some of the different techniques that can be used to help manage the group and, you know, how to kick off a proper discussion stroke argument and then how to manage it back in again. It's been very interesting.
Here's an example. Talk about players being dropped. And I think I've probably mentioned this on the show before, but it's worth repeating for anyone who hasn't heard it. Here's an example of someone avoiding a meeting and causing a little bit of trouble for a player. Once we had our one of our senior bowlers who's getting on a bit in years for a bowler. He's been a regular first team player, but one week he was dropped and the captain forgot to mention it to him. And he turned up on Saturday, wheeled his bag into the first team changing room, who were at home. And he was greeted by a young player who had just made his way into the first team, who said, "Oh, I don't know why you're in here, mate. You're in the twos." So maybe that's not the best way to tell someone he's been dropped.
No, correct.
He almost didn't play. He said, "Oh, well, if that's the way I'm going to be treated, I'm leaving." And he drove off. But he came back about 5 minutes later and joined up with the second team, so he was okay. Berners, what's your experience with meetings?
Long, boring, meaningless. I always think, it's funny you should say that. In a business perspective, I was having come from, you know, something pretty corporate before this, that the number of meetings you used to have, which were actually, you know, could be dissected by a bit of common sense or just, you know, some good leadership from your part, which basically I always think it's responsibility that leads to meetings, that someone is, you know, not quite sure about something, that probably they actually need to just back themselves and make a precise decision to save everyone a bit of time. With my sport, with what we're doing now, it's all quite dynamic, and I quite like that. You just, you know, you do what you need to do rather than necessities, which seem to be the way in some walks of life, is that it's almost a done thing to call a meeting and meetings. But maybe Gareth can pass on some advice.
Well, Gareth, yeah, I was going to ask if there is one tip that you could give that you didn't know before you started this that you now can pass on to the listeners, what would that one thing be?
I think, well, there's so many things, but the one thing I picked up yesterday, and we've all been in those long meetings with big agendas, haven't we, is that you can actually pull that agenda apart, and there'll be certain points on there that require everybody's attention, and there'll be certain points on there that you could actually split the room into five and say, right, you deal with that one, and then report back into the group. So from a time perspective and also from an attention perspective, you probably end up getting through things a lot quicker, yet getting to the same outcomes as if you'd have all deliberated over every single point over sort of 3 or 4 hours. So that's from a time-saving perspective, but also managing the energy within the group.
Yeah, of course. Meetings, I suppose, are a little bit in the news this week with three Australian players being dropped for disciplinary reasons for not attending a meeting in essence, or doing a presentation to the management team.
Yeah, they are. Certainly is.
What did you think of that, Gareth?
Well, I can only assume that it's not based solely around that one incident. And that was probably the straw that broke the camel's back, I think, in regards to how the leadership and management team looked at it. And what I'd always say is it's really easy to look on the inside. And obviously, I've been on the inside when everybody's been looking in. Mm. And often the guys on the inside, Mickey Arthur and Michael Clark, will have the best insight into what's gone on before. So I can only assume they've made a good decision, to be honest, and they're setting the tone for what they want to go forward rather than sweeping it under the carpet. So from a distance, and having been involved in those sort of things before, I applaud them for the action that they've taken.
Yeah, it's very difficult, isn't it, when you're trying to sort of extrapolate what's happened from one piece of information. It's, you know, it's like the blind man, the blind man and the elephant, you know, that story where, you know, if he feels a different part of the elephant, he assumes it's a different animal.
Mm, yeah, I just think that it's got to be a number of things that have built up, and some of the quotes that have come out in the last couple of days. And it was interesting to see James Pattinson talk yesterday and apologising not just for that incident, but for some of the things that he hasn't done leading up to matches, for example. So it's been interesting that a couple of the key players have been picked out in it, and obviously had action, and again, I don't think that's a bad thing as well, and I'm sure that there's a lot of things that have happened beforehand which have led to this decision being made now.
But that's all quite serious meetings and disciplinary stuff. But Bernice, you've got something a little bit more fun. We've started posting videos onto our Facebook page.
We have. So we've got a new dynamic feature of Pitch Vision, which allows a player to collect a video clip every time he plays in training. So live from a training venue, he can have a 3, 4, or 5 second clip which he can upload to his own or her own private online library. So adding to that every time they play and train, and then the fun bit being they can directly post to Facebook and share the videos via social media and also email. So it means that it's really nice for kind of remote learning and showing people what you can and can't do, which is obviously quite a big frustration in all walks of amateur sport. But having a portal that you can, you know, actually share your own performance feedback and get opinions of others is proving very powerful. We put a funny clip up just the other day with the cameras getting hit, and I think we're up to something like 30,000 views, which is remarkable, you know, and that was just for a camera getting hit. So hopefully, if you stay tuned on the Facebook page there, you'll have some topical conversation streams about some relevant cricketing training exercises, hopefully.
Yeah, it's a short video. It's on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com Pitch Vision Academy. And yeah, it's as simple as that. You can go and have a look, watch the video. It takes up 3 to 5 seconds of your time. And sometimes it's funny, and sometimes there's a coaching point to be made. But it's an entertaining way to pass a bit of time if you've got a 15-minute tea break or something like that.
I've already had a few snide remarks come through, people thinking it's me batting. They failed to realise I'm a 6-foot left-hander when it's got like a 3-foot 10-year-old getting his middle pole wrenched back into the back of the net. So it's not me, guys. It's not Berners. The Bernster will appear soon, and you'll see a graceful kind of video stream then.
Okay, so let's wrap up this section with a yes-no round. Every week, Gareth and I have to answer 3 questions. We can only answer them yes or no, no matter how much more detail we want to go into. So, Berners, you've got the 3 questions. Fire away.
First question. It was right to drop Australian players for disciplinary reasons.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question. It's the right time for Sehwag to be dropped.
No.
Yes.
Third question. More captains should be brave with declarations.
Emphatically, yes.
Correct.
Every week, we ask you to send in your questions, your cricket coaching questions, And then hopefully between us, the team can come up with a decent answer or two for you to try. And the best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So we've got a couple of questions ready. What have we got this week, Berners?
First question's in from Daryl, and very topical this time of the year, and also before every game. It's a bit of a bugbear for a lot of amateur players, but he's asking what the best pre-game warm-ups are that can motivate players.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. The term motivation, because when you think about warm-ups, you just think about, well, warming up, you know, getting ready to play. And it's a difficult one if people are being a bit lethargic and a little bit half-hearted about it. I tend to find that happens with away games. I don't know why it is. Maybe it's because you've been sitting around traveling and you just get a little bit lethargic, and then it takes that much more effort to get from zero up to game ready. So that's the unmotivated side. And the other side of it is you don't want to fire up people too much, because if everyone is completely fired, it's not like a football match or a rugby match where everyone gets fired up by the manager and then runs out to play, because you might get fired up in the warm up only to find that you have to sit around because your team are batting and you're batting at number seven. So I'm interested in how you balance that out in terms of the psychological side of a warm up, Karis.
Yeah, well, I think warm-ups have to be a bit of fun, to be honest, and I think fun motivates most of us. So there's a number of things that can be done. The fun can be incorporated by doing something a bit wacky. And there's a warm-up that we do at school that I was taught last year. It was not something I've come up with, which is replicating the movements of animals, because obviously animals move in very different ways, and that can actually activate different muscle groups. So an example of us moving like an animal is you do bunny hops between two cones. Obviously, being a bunny, then you can be an alligator, which is crawling along on all fours, moving your right arm and your right leg first, and your left arm and your left leg crawling along the ground. You can do some bird ones, which obviously get the arms going. And whilst that sounds a bit primary school stuff, it was something that we did with a company called Super Skills Travel last year, with Matthew Hoggard being involved. And Matthew Hoggard, being one of the biggest kids that I've ever worked with, then took that back into the Leicestershire environment. And Jigan Nayak, the other day when I was in India, was informing me about the animals' warm-ups that he was been doing at Leicestershire last year ahead of 2020 games, much to the home crowd's amusement, and it helped to motivate them as well. So that's a bit of fun. But I'd always try to incorporate some cricket in there as well. So a really good one that England do after they've got a bit of blood into the legs is that they put, the rubber stumps that bend that you use for throwing at in your warm-ups to get your throwing accuracy up. Put three of those in a line very close to each other, and get people to run in and out of them. So use them like intervention poles, and then get a ball fed into them either along the ground or for a diving catch before they go to the back of the queue again. So trying to incorporate some real functional things within a warm-up is also good from a motivational point of view. There is a time for prehab, which we've discussed before, which is strengthening up muscles, and particularly the small muscle groups around joints and your core and what have you. But also there's a time to get it more game specific, and also a time to get it more fun, because ultimately if we've got people switched on to a game specific warm-up or a fun warm-up, then we get them motivated, and that can only help them in terms of the psychological things that you talked about earlier.
Yeah, I also think it's important that you find time for players to do their own thing if they want to and they need to do that. I know personally, I like to have as long a warm up as possible. I would spend 40 minutes catching balls before the start of play if I could find someone to throw me balls for that long as a wicket keeper. But I know that the more I do that, the more confident I feel, and the better the results are when I go out into the middle. Whereas the opening batsman in my team, all he want he will rock up just before the start of the game, hit a few balls into the advertising boards, and then walk out to open the batting, and he's perfectly happy doing that. So what I think individually what people need, if you can find time to pair people off and hit some balls or do some catching or do individual things, I think that's an important part of motivating as well.
Yeah, and also having the being brave enough to say, do you know, well, we're going to change it today because we're not particularly fresh. And this can happen even at club level when you're only meeting once or twice a week, where things can get a little bit stale and the same old, same old. So, I mean, an example of that, and this is an extreme example, but we were getting to the end of a season, 2005 with Somerset, and obviously we're doing stuff day in, day out, but I just sensed that the energy was going in the mornings for our warm-ups. So we did something which was, right, we're going to be on the park at 11 o'clock. I want everybody to turn up at 10:45. We'll do some stretching in the changing room, and we'll go straight out onto the pitch and play. And we were struggling in this particular game against North Hants, and all the North Hants players were going, where the heck are Somerset? So the fast bowlers had been in the pool, down at the local pool, had been in the jacuzzis to do their stuff beforehand. And then at 5:02, just before the watch, just as the bell went out, we all went onto the pitch. We'd been stretching for about 5 minutes inside the changing room, went out there, and we got 5 for 26 and got ourselves back into the game. So whilst the warm-up wasn't conventional, again, going back to that motivational thing, it actually did something different, which promoted a complete change in the mentality, which was enabled us to be successful on the pitch. So don't be too tied into doing things all of the time exactly the same, because sometimes that can be draining of your energy as well.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. In the amateur game, I always find that whether you're batting or you're bowling, I always find that you pretty much set yourself up in the first 30 minutes. It kind of sets the tone for the day. Like, you know, you've all been working all week and you've all come together. A few boys have got hangovers or whatever, and you've got all these 11 different mindsets. And if you can just, you know, whatever you do, batting or bowling, the first half an hour, if you're in the zone, it can really lay a nice little stake in the ground for the rest of the day. And it's quite hard to come back as well in a, you know, in a shorter format of the game. So whatever you do, if you can get the boys up for it when they initially get out on the park, then brilliant. Okay, our next question's in from Matt. This season he's saying that they're entertaining a transition period into the first team. So the last couple of years, they've been playing a few 15-year-olds, and they're at the point now where they've got 5 regular players in the first team that are all 17 and 18-year-olds. So he's just asking what the best questions to ask them are, without kind of applying detrimental pressure. Having already played a few games, they kind of know what it's all about. But obviously they're going to play a more prominent role now, being that, you know, the main bulk of the team. So what kind of things can they be saying to a young player to kind of inspire them and recreate them without sounding too harsh?
The classic transition from a promising youngster to someone who has to put in some consistent performances as a more senior player. What do you think, Gareth?
Well, I think it's pretty unrealistic to start off with, and there's very few 17, 18-year-olds that would be able to apply that consistency, because consistency is something that we're all striving for, let alone 17, 18-year-olds. So I think we need to be realistic around our own expectations. The challenge here is obviously the number of them, being that 5 of the players are actually in the same age range. So it's a great question about applying without applying detrimental pressure. And I think whether you're 17 or 18, a really good question to ask anybody is, when you are most successful or have been most successful in the past, what is it that you've put around yourself? What thought process, what feelings, what preparation, what approaches have you put around you that have given you the best chance of success in those examples? And I always ask that of everybody, particularly young players, because the fact is that over the last couple of years, they would have probably had a couple of successful moments, but due to being 15 or 16 years old, they wouldn't have been particularly often. But if they can recapture some of the things which gave them the best chance of success on those occasions, and then reapply that so you make that happen more often, then in time their consistency will increase. So I always call it your A game. When you bring your A game to a game of cricket, what do you do? And get them to write it down, get them to articulate that to yourself, maybe to each other as well, and almost commit to it. And we did it one day. We got bowled out for 55 in Jamaica to lose a test match. And we had a big meeting. Andy Flower chaired it. And Alistair Cook stood up in the room and he said, what I haven't been doing recently is this. So what I'm going to do from now on is X, Y, and Z. And one of the things that I'm going to pride myself on is that I'm not going to have a drive at a ball outside off stump until I'm on at least 80. And he went into the next match and actually had a flirt at one on 65 and put it away. And went on and scored a big 100 in the game, which got us back into the series. So, you know, he took his A game and really thought about the things that he's been doing and thought about the things that he'd been doing when he'd been successful and reapplied it. And I think for a 17, 18-year-old, that's a really good way to start off your season and also to be more consistent in what you do around the game, which then brings better and more consistent results.
Yeah, it's that classic answer, isn't it, that's very clear but also very ambiguous, and saying it depends, because as you say, Gareth, everyone is slightly different, everyone has different ways of doing things, and maybe you don't learn what the best way is for you until you're 25 or
40,
35. Yeah, I was going to say 40, yeah. And so I think, but starting that process as early as possible is a fantastic thing, as long as you can keep it within the context of a supportive context of saying, look, it's going to take you a while to suss this out. We are going to have patience with you and not drop you the first time you get naught, or take the spinner off the first time you get hit for a couple of boundaries in the over, or whatever it is. So in a way, it's a difficult one for the captain and the selection people to get right, because especially if you're talking about a first team situation, you want the team to do well. You can't keep on carrying players who aren't doing brilliant, but also you want to support them. So it is a difficult one. I think being able to match your practice to the kind of goals that you have is a key one. That's something that Michael Bevan says. He's got an upcoming course where he talks about consistency in batting, but it's just as applicable for any cricket skill. If you know what your goal is and you know what you are supposed to be doing on a Saturday afternoon or whenever you play, and then your practice matches those goals, and you're not going through the motions in a practice session. You know, your practice is directing your results through to what you do in a match. Then that's a big part of it as well. So maybe that's something practical that you can look at. Setting some goals and then applying those goals to what you do in practice.
Yeah, and I think what you've hit on there is the importance of nets. You know, we've talked about nets and the value of nets, but actually nets are all about practicing your match game, aren't they? They're not about necessarily expanding your game and trying different shots. They're about seeing how effective all of the things that you've worked on, whether they be in your head or whether that be up against a wall, hitting balls, you know, throwing a ball into a wall and hitting balls back and practicing a slightly different movement. But it's then using those nets to apply all of that into and just see if it works in a match context. So when you go out on the pitch, you can show off that you can relax, you can do the things that you want to do rather than feel that, you know, you're being dictated to by the bowl or the match situation. So, I'm a big one for goal setting. I'm not a slave to it because it doesn't suit everybody. But in terms of preparation, I'm huge on it. And if you can get your nets, which is most of our preparation time, let's be honest, if we can get our nets to be reflective of what we're going to do on the Saturday, then the chances of us repeating that consistency on a Saturday is going to increase.
That's another thing that Michael Bevan talks about. And you may have noticed that he has got a course coming out. That's why I'm talking about it. And we're doing a lot of work in the background to get it ready in time for next week. But he talks about progressing and regressing through levels until you get to the point where you feel confident of doing something at a certain level, and then you can move forward and move. And if you feel like it's not working in net, if you feel like something's not working in a game, take it to nets. If you feel like it's not working in nets, take it back to throwdowns or a bowling machine or even underarm feeds, and you can move up and down those levels until you feel more confident doing it. And confidence is what breeds that ability to be more consistent over time.
Absolutely.
Where are you with bringing a young player in, Berners?
If they're good enough, chuck them in there. They can't really do no wrong. I've got a big thing in my bonnet, though, with how in amateur cricket especially, they often get brought in as a promising young player and then not played in the position that they specialise. So, a guy, especially in Premier League cricket, you find that someone that's been opening the bats from maybe 16 or 17 playing representative cricket for his county, and then he's batting at number 7 in his club first team, which for me is, that's totally pointless. And it happened to me a lot in my youth where you'd step up and play, but then you almost become a bit of a kind of, money filler. You're just, he can field and it's good for him to be involved in and around the changing room. But you might go 3 weekends without, I know that, they hit the ball harder and the pace of the game is quicker and you're playing with a generally better standard of players. But if you're not the one that's in that position and learning from the experience of being actually involved, I think it's a bit detrimental to the actual progress of a younger player, rather than just believe in them and let them open the batting. Let a 16-year-old open a batting against an Australian overseas player who's going to try and knock their head off. See how he gets on then, and you'll probably find 3 or 4 games in after doing that, being a young player and of getting to that level anyway, he's going to naturally self-adjust and he'll probably actually end up doing okay. He's probably going to struggle in there at the start, but just to be patient, give him a chance and let him kind of settle in. Then, of course, you're in the conundrum then where you get the youngster in, he opens the batting, he gets a first baller and he's in and out. He's up and down like a yo-yo. And again, he never knows where he stands with it all.
Yeah, you're of the school of chuck him in the deep end and see if they can swim.
Well, yeah, I mean, if they're good enough, then I believe this old selection kind of 101, isn't it? If the kid's good enough, then why is he in the team if you don't think he can do a job? Don't pick him. Put the other bloke in.
And you've talked about that before, haven't you, Gareth, about the need sometimes to have someone who is, not going to be playing in their position because of the resources you've got available to you and having some kind of rotation system where everyone has their go at being the fielder, and then they go back into the second team.
Yeah, I think that's fine. But then my bones are when that's the same player, like one player that's constantly in and out and never really knows what's what. If he's got an understanding that he's going to have a couple of games where he might not be involved, but it's just for the basics of him being involved, then that's fair enough.
Yeah, it's all about communication, isn't it? And it's difficult to do with one player. Most of the time we've got a couple of players, and we've got the situation at school this year where I've got a couple of fifth years that have got another 2 years in cricket who are both really good batters, and they're going to need to have their batting developed this year. I don't want them to have a year where they don't get any batting at all. So if they played all of the games in the first team, there's a chance in a vast majority of them they're not going to get to the wicket. So we're going to alternate them between playing and opening the batting for the second team, and then coming in and playing, probably batting at 8 or 9 in the first team, doing a little bit of bowling and fielding. So every weekend they will change. They'll swap over those two. So they're not actually going to play in the same team at any given point. Yet next year when they come together to play a more prominent role, they'll actually be batting 3 or 4 or 5 and getting in every single week, having that year of scoring runs in the second team, but also having some experience of being around the first team environment.
My first experience of first team cricket at my club was stood at mid-on, when a guy called Chris Rogers, Australian international nowadays, was playing for North Devon, absolutely smashed one out of the screws, about second ball of the day, knee-high catch, hit me straight in the bread basket, didn't get anywhere near it, went on to score about 190 or something against us, and we all went in at tea feeling a little bit dreary.
And you nursing a bruise.
I was nursing a bruise. Yeah. Ironically, it went full circle, and Chris Rogers, Buck Rogers, actually came and played for Exeter a couple of years after that, and played for us for a good 2 or 3 years. But unfortunately, I met his wrath when he was at North Devon down in the Devon Premier League.
Mind you, you have to be quite a good aim to hit you as a youngster, Berners. I can imagine you being as skinny as a rake.
Oh yeah, frail. I was frail. Down in Stowe there, I nearly used to get blown over the sea wall. On the soapbox this week, it's our coach, our leader supreme, Hammer Them Coach.
There's an interesting challenge that a lot of coaches face, and it kind of shows up in the performance of players. Of something I've noticed recently is that you have to be able to match the skill level of the player to the challenge that they're facing. Now, I coach in club cricket. It's one of the teams that I coach. It's a young team, an under-14s club side, and there's a couple of players in that side who are playing at county standard, very good players. And there's a couple of players on that side who are not so good, because, you know, they do it for a bit of fun. They haven't got a great deal of talent, but they do their best. And there's a big challenge there for me to be able to allow both of those players to get something from a normal coaching session. So my point this week is that if you're a coach, it's very important to look at each individual player and try and match the challenge of them to the skill that you're trying to implement. That's all we got time for this week. Before we go, we have a couple of little things just to sort out. The first one being the winner of the competition. So that person will win a prize, an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we had Daryl's questions about motivating players in pre-game warm-up, and Matt's question about transitioning young players into a more senior role. Which one did you prefer, Gareth?
Good questions, good discussions, quite lengthy discussions today, so that was good, with some different opinions, which I liked. I'm going to go with the warm-up, because we all do it, don't we? It doesn't matter whether we're a team of 30-year-olds or a team of 11-year-olds, we do warm-ups, and we do them a lot, and without getting them into that Groundhog Day mode where the same thing happens all the time, hopefully we've given some different ideas of the way that coaches and players can do their warm-ups. So I'm going with Daryl.
Well done, Daryl, and a course will be on its way to you as soon as you've chosen it. So, Berners, if somebody wanted to send in their question and have the chance of winning a prize, an online coaching course on Pitch Vision Academy, what would they need to do?
They can drop us a line. Our number here is 02088 167691, or they can email us, and the address for that is coach@pitchvision.com.
They can. Remember that we're posting videos onto our Facebook page at the moment, so you can comment on those if you head over to facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. You can also find us on Twitter. We're at PV Cricket Coach. And if you want to listen to this show every week, and why wouldn't you? It's the best cricket coaching podcast in the entire world. Then you can head over to iTunes and do a search for Pitch Vision Academy and subscribe there. If you don't use iTunes, then you can find the feed for this show at pitchvision.com/academy. Just click on the podcast link for all the details there. So that's all for this week. Until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Berners.
Cheers, guys.